Hello, everybody out there, and welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Today, we are going to be doing a show about Lucy the Elephant. Lucy the Elephant is an elephant who lives at the Edmonton Valley Zoo, who has lived there for a very, very, very long time. And there have been plenty of efforts to try and get her moved to a sanctuary over the years, all of which have been, unfortunately, unsuccessful. We're going to be speaking with Julie from ZooCheck about that a bit later in the hour. But before we do that, I want to get to some news. Today on the program, we've got a few pieces of news that I found interesting over the course of the week. And the first one came to us from CBC News. This is something that isn't reported on very often, but when it is, it's always shocking, to say the least. The first headline I'm going to read off is 100 sled dogs rescued in the Laurentians. The owner of more than 100 neglected sled dogs has turned the animals over to the SPCA because he could no longer care for them, officials with the SPCA Laurentides Labelle and Humane Society International said Tuesday. Quote, "The dogs were chained outside without regular access to adequate food, clean water, or shelter," Nicholas Gower, a Humane Society International spokesman, said in a statement. "The dogs, who were being kept in the Upper Laurentians, have been transported to an emergency shelter in Valmorain, Quebec, and are being provided with veterinary care," officials said. The dogs' living conditions could have gotten much worse because about 30 of the seized dogs were pregnant, said Corinne Gonzalez, executive director of the SPCA Laurentides Labelle. Quote, "Without our intervention, the owner could easily have found himself with 150 more puppies when winter is right around the corner," Gonzalez said. The shelter is asking for donations to help pay the veterinary care needed for the dogs. Officials said the dogs will be sterilized and made available for adoption as soon as possible. "Neglect of sled dogs is a regularly reported problem in Canada," said the animal welfare groups involved in the rescue. They are calling on the provincial and federal governments to pass stronger protection laws. Sterilization of sled dogs and planning for their care during the 8-month low season, when sledding is not as popular, must be a priority, the group said. Last month, the Quebec government presented an action plan aimed at fighting animal cruelty. The plan includes hiring more inspectors and adopting stricter regulations for the care of pets. And the next story coming to us from the Canadian Press, the headline is "Seal to be served in Parliament Hill Restaurant." Seal meat is about to join beef tenderloin and baked salmon on the haute cuisine menu for MPs and senators in the parliamentary restaurant. MPs say Parliament is taking a cue from Governor General Michael Jean, who triggered a global controversy last May by eating seal meat while on a visit to Nunavut in a show of support for Inuit culture. The parliamentary restaurant is one of the gems on Parliament Hill. Its alabaster columns vault towards a ceiling spiked with several domes. The spectacular view of the Ottawa River is available only to ministers, MPs, journalists, and others who work on the Hill. Members of the public can only enter the restaurant as guests of those holding a parliamentary pass. Jean chose a more down-to-earth venue when she sliced and ate a raw seal heart from a carcass that had been laid out on a floor at a Rankin Inlet Community Festival on Hudson Bay. Liberal, Conservative, and New Democrat MPs say the addition of seal meat to the menu in the exclusive parliamentary restaurant will also be a significant boost for sealers battling a European Union ban on their products. Quote, "The sealers will be able to say, this is legal in Canada. We follow the legal process. Parliament Hill serves seal meat, and members of Parliament and senators eat seal meat," said Liberal MP Marcel Proulx, a member of the powerful all-party board that oversees Commons budget and bylaws. The head of a lobby group in Newfoundland and Labrador welcomed the move with enthusiasm. Quote, "I think it's a wonderful gesture," said Frank Pinhorn, executive director of the Canadian Sealers Association. "I commend the federal government or whoever is involved in it. I think it's a real demonstration of support for Canadian culture, and I think it's long overdue." Two East Coast MPs, Conservative Gerald Keddy and New Democrat Yvon Godin, also embraced the measure as a positive step, each saying that they have eaten seal meat and believe it should be promoted by Parliament. Quote, "Awesome," Keddy said when he learned of the development Tuesday. Quote, "I think it's a great show of support for Canadian sealers and the seal industry. Plus, as an East Coaster, I've eaten seal a number of times. My preference is ring seal out of the high Arctic. That is the tastiest of them all. Next to that, the gray seal is fine. Not a thing wrong with that." And the next story coming to us from internish.org, Interniche is an organization that we've actually interviewed members of before, and this is a story coming from them. Indian teachers call for replacement of dissections and animal experiments. Major financial investment in life sciences education made. Indian university teachers meeting in Jaipur, Rajasthan, for a national alternatives conference have concluded with a call for a full replacement of dissections and animal experiments. And a resolution adopted unanimously at the National Workshop Cum Symposium on Potential Alternatives to Dissection and Animal Experimentation in Zoology and the Practical Curriculum, the participants called on University Board of Studies to remove animal use from the syllabus. With the main focus on zoology, teachers of anatomy, physiology, and other disciplines came from across Rajasthan and other states in India to learn about alternatives and for hands-on practice with these innovative learning tools. The experience of curricular change internationally and across the country was shared in keynote, plenary, and other presentations. Participants were joined by representatives from the government agency that regulates animal experimentation, the CPC-SEA. To support the process of replacement with alternatives, learning tools worth over euro 100,000 were distributed by the International Network for Humane Education, which is Interniche, directly to the participants and other teachers. 75 sets of 15 alternative CDs and DVDs, including advanced anatomy software of the frog, dogfish, pigeon, and earthworm, and several virtual physiology labs were donated. Further distribution will take place across Rajasthan, Gujarat, Maharashtra, and other states in what comprises a major investment in Indian life sciences education. The event is to be followed by a major international book, Alternatives to Dissection in Animal Experimentation and Life Sciences Education, Research and Testing, a Manual for Universities and Colleges. The resolution reads as follows, quote, "We the participants, 1, recognize that animals are sentient beings and that life in all its forms should be fully respected. 2, recognize the pedagogical, ethical, and environmental advantages of humane and innovative alternatives over harmful animal use in life science education and training. 3, join the global movement for humane education and call for full replacement of harmful animal use with alternatives. 4, recognize the importance of effective and ethical education and training for future Indian professionals. 5, call on the government of India, CPC-SEA, UGC, academic councils, board of studies, and educational institutes to work towards removing animal experimentation and the dissection of purpose-killed animals from the life sciences syllabus." Amazing. I have to say, with this story and the story from last week about the banning of elephants from zoos in India, I am so impressed with what's going on in India right now, and I'm going to work very hard to get some Indian folks on the program to talk about all this stuff. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to get Julie from ZooCheck on the line. You are listening to Animal Voices on CAUT 89.5 FM. Julie, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
I was wondering if you could start by giving us a bit of your background and how you became interested in animal issues and what your work typically entails.
Oh, sure. Boy, that goes a long way back now. I was just thinking this morning, I've been employed by ZooCheck full-time for the last 10 years.
Okay.
But I've been working with ZooCheck probably for 15 or 18 years. Before that, I was an SPCA agent for a number of years. And prior to that, I don't want to admit because I'm going to reveal my age soon.
Okay. No need to do that.
So I've been interested in animal issues, obviously, since a reasonably young age. I grew up in an animal-loving family, and as I got older, I started doing some volunteer work and saw some problems in the system, and that's really how I got involved.
And could you describe to us a little bit about what ZooCheck is and what ZooCheck does?
Sure. ZooCheck Canada is a national wildlife protection charity. We primarily deal with wildlife in captivity, and we specialize in that area, and we consult with organizations around the world because of our specialty. But in addition to that, we also do some issues that involve animals in the wild. Quite often, those would be issues where animals might be taken into captivity. For instance, we fought for grizzly bear rehabilitation in Canada because those animals were always ending up in captivity, and of course, bears are among the worst candidates for captivity.
And so ZooCheck is not simply not only a zoo-based organization.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, keeping in mind when we talk about captivity, that can deal with all kinds of issues, obviously circus issues, exotic pets. But also we run an education program now that also includes a farm animal section on it. Because anytime animals are in captivity, they have certain pressures on them, and we have to deal with that stuff.
I was wondering if we could start, because I brought you on the program to talk specifically about Lucy the elephant at the Edmonton Valley Zoo, but I was wondering if we could begin by talking about elephants and zoos generally. I'm sure for a lot of people in North America, zoos are probably the only place that they have met an elephant face-to-face. Why is a zoo not an appropriate place for an elephant, and do you think there's any way that a zoo could quote-unquote do it right?
Well, it's an interesting question because, first off, never in Canada could it happen because our climate is just inappropriate, and elephants are highly social animals. There's no shortage of evidence to that extent, and they're wide-ranging animals as well. And so the problem we have specifically in Canada when we put them into captivity is that in the wintertime, because they are evolved to deal with warm climate, in the wintertime, they end up locked in small barns for most of the time. That certainly is a problem, and of course, it restricts the numbers of individual animals that can be in the group as well. But I actually think that elephants are one of the species that where it's not possible to meet the animal's biological and behavioral needs, and for that reason, I don't think they should be held in captivity.
So not in any instance?
Yes, I'd say that, but of course we have these animals that are in captivity right now, and so we have to make decisions about how do we best meet those animals' needs given their current circumstances. And so, for instance, I would say, you know, probably the best captive facility in North America for elephants is the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee. It's 2,700 acres, and there's a large number of elephants there, which can accommodate a social group, although it's not a natural social group. It's still too small at 2,700 acres, but it's remarkably better than anything that exists in North America right now. So I would say, you know, for an animal like Lucy, it's an option that will improve her life, but her life will never be given back to her. She was taken out of the wild in Sri Lanka, and that part of her life is now gone.
What is an elephant's life like in the wild? Where do elephants normally live in the world?
Asian and African elephants are the two species most people are familiar with. And, of course, habitat is shrinking, as we know, and there's still culling going on of elephants in Africa. But the reality of their natural life is that they live in large social groups. They're matriarchal. They move over long distances for various reasons. Sometimes it's to find food or water, but other times it's to meet up with different family groups. They can know up to 100 individuals in the wild, and they communicate over long distances through infrasound. So, as you can imagine, you take that animal and you put them into captivity, and they are unable to cope with the captivity of it, and they end up obese. They end up with arthritis and foot problems. In fact, foot infections are the leading cause of death in captive elephants. And that's because basically they can't walk any distance. And they're also standing on either hard-packed ground or cement floors in barns, which pushes their cuticles up into their feet. That causes the infection. And then because they're unable to walk, they don't have appropriate blood flow to heal from this condition, and that's why it kills them. So you can see how they've evolved even physically to cope with their natural situation and their, you know, natural tendencies to walk long distances and so on. And when you remove them from that setting, it sets up a whole new series of problems for them.
Now, one of the things that I've learned from reading about elephants in the past is that elephants, in addition to the sort of their spatial needs and their social needs, they're very intelligent animals that have an incredible capacity for thinking and for emotion. And just wondering if you could maybe paint a picture for us of the sort of mental toll that being in a zoo might take on an elephant.
Yeah, well, of course, first I'd like to say that for most species, we probably only know the tip of the iceberg about them. And every species, we always compare it to humans, which is probably not a fair comparison because each animal has the skill it needs to be the animal it is, with maybe the exception of humans because we seem to be destroying our environment around us. But so we know for sure that elephants are self-aware. We know that they grieve and that they remember those that have gone before them in a similar way that human societies do. We know that they have long memories and that they have significant social needs. So, for instance, when you take an elephant and you put them into captivity, if there aren't other elephants to socialize with, they'll often develop a rapport with the keepers. And that's a situation actually we're dealing with right now in Edmonton, because the Edmonton Valley Zoo is saying, well, you know, Lucy is bonded with her keepers, and for that reason she needs to stay here. She'll never bond with other elephants. Of course, it's a ridiculous argument. What it proves is, yes, she is a social elephant. She hasn't lost her mind in that sense, but she is suffering greatly because she has had to develop social rapport with someone not from her species. So imagine yourself locked in a small enclosure with maybe a dog. Certainly you're going to develop a close rapport with that dog, but it won't be the same as the kind of relationship you may have with another human.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of how many elephants are currently in zoos in Canada or North America?
Well, in Canada there's roughly 35 or so, and when I say roughly, the reason we don't know the exact numbers is because one facility in Ontario trades elephants back and forth across the border constantly.
Okay.
That's African Lion Safari. They actually have the biggest herd in Canada. Most of the other facilities are very, very small groups of animals. Lucy's the only one right now on her own, but there are two, for instance, in Quebec that have tuberculosis, and although people can look at them, they are considered to be quarantined, meaning they can't be moved anywhere or move any new animals in. So North America-wide, the numbers grow greatly because most elephants are owned actually by Ringling Brothers. They have somewhere in the range of 50 Asian elephants, and they have a facility in Florida where they continue to breed elephants as well.
Sorry to interrupt. Ringling Brothers is the circus company.
Yes, that's
yes.
Right.
Okay. Sorry, continue. So they own most of the elephants in North America? Is
yeah,
that correct?
They have by far what people call the biggest collection. I think that word collection is obscene, but that's how it's termed. So.
Okay. And what are the laws in Canada that relate to elephants in captivity? I mean, you know, I'm assuming for at least some of the people listening to the program, they're wondering, does this kind of treatment not fall under any sort of animal cruelty legislation?
Yeah, well, it's a complex web of laws that we have in Canada. Most of them are enormously weak and very vague. In certain provinces, we have some laws that deal with zoo standards, and Alberta happens to be one of those provinces, and it's because Zoochuck fought for most of a decade to get those standards in place. And as you can imagine, when you're fighting for legislation, you often lose some points and gain some ground and so on. And actually, the standards that exist in Alberta, although certainly they're not perfect, they're a lot better than in other provinces. For instance, they say you cannot keep animals in inappropriate social groups. Obviously, a lone elephant is an inappropriate social group. So that's, of course, why we've pushed the legal issue, which I'm sure we'll get into a bit later. Mm-hmm. But the problem with all of these laws is there's always ways around them. And there's one very specific problem that keeps recurring, and I want to address it right now because it is very serious.
Sure.
And that is the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums. They are an industry organization. They are not an animal welfare organization. They are not a conservation organization. They are only there to protect their members, and their members are the zoos, not the animals in those zoos. So they run around and try to get their members exempted from provincial laws. They did this in Alberta. They are making attempts in British Columbia to do the same thing, and we've seen it in each province, including Ontario. So the Zoo Association ends up making efforts to help facilitate their members do essentially whatever it is that they want to do. Let me give you an example. Around the world, the zoo associations all admit that elephants are highly social animals, and especially female elephants should never be housed singly. And CASA, Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquaria, had the same criteria in their standards. When we laid the complaints about Lucy, they just went ahead and changed their standard. They said, okay, yeah, they shouldn't be housed socially except if a vet and a keeper say it's okay. In this case, the vet happens to be a dog or cat vet who's really not very familiar with elephants. But this is a serious problem with respect to legislation. As far as our actual cruelty legislation is concerned, there's sort of two levels of it. There's the criminal code, which is 100 years old, and the burden of proof is extremely high. It has to be unnecessary pain and suffering. So, for instance, if you do something to an animal that someone might consider necessary in order to train them, for instance, maybe beating an elephant, mm-hmm. you could beat that animal near to death without ever having a criminal code charge, because that was necessary to maybe protect a keeper or necessary to train that animal so that it was safe to have in the vicinity of humans. So that's a fundamental problem. On the issue of neglect, it has to be willful neglect, meaning the person had to intend to neglect the animal. Of course, no one ever says they intended to neglect their animal, no matter what the situation is. So it's very high burden of proof. Then we have these provincial laws, which in Ontario is called the Ontario SPCA Act, in Alberta, the Animal Protection Act, and so on. They're right across the country. And these are also extremely vague. In some cases, like in Ontario, they're not punitive, so essentially they're meaningless. All they are is a measuring stick for which to go up after a criminal code charge. And in most cases, there's nothing specific in them. They say that the animal may be subject to undue hardship, for instance. Hmm. Well, you know, the question is always, what is the definition of undue hardship? And what we find is the enforcement agencies want to interpret in the most conservative possible way, meaning it provides little or no protection for most animals.
Would animals such as Lucy be trained in zoos? Is that something that happens more so in entertainment, or would those types of sort of training programs also happen with elephants in captivity in zoos?
There's various levels of training that go on. In some cases, still zoo elephants in Canada have been, up until very recently, rented out to circuses. And when I say until recently, there's nothing to stop them from doing it again. It's just right now there aren't many animal circuses in Canada. Okay. But for instance, African Lion Safari continues to train their elephants to do circus-style tricks. Certainly the Bowmanville Zoo, the guy who owns that, his name is Michael Hackenberger, he owns two elephants, and in particular Limba. He's constantly got her out for elephant rides at fairs and things like that. So that requires ongoing training and essentially making the animal constantly fearful that there could be repercussions if something went wrong. In the case of Lucy, she's trained in a little different way. They use free contact with her. There are two ways of managing, I put big quotes around that too, managing elephants. That's what they call it in the industry, mm-hmm. To make the animals do what they want. So there's something called free contact, which is what they use with Lucy, and that is, you know, with the bull hook or ankus, which is a long pole with a hook on the end of it. And essentially it's a tool to threaten the elephant. And they would got, for instance, in the case of Lucy, they say, well, we walk her all the time. That's how we exercise her because, yes, we admit the enclosure is small. And the way they walk her around the zoo is under the threat of the bull hook so that, you know, there would be no way she would be able to get away or escape or cause any havoc in the city of Edmonton. Mm-hmm. That's also the same tool that's used by the circus industry. Now, I don't believe that Lucy is being beaten, but I believe she's under constant threat of this, essentially what's a weapon and wouldn't be allowed in any other facet of society. Then there's other elephants that are trained using something called protected contact, and this is used at the Calgary Zoo and the Toronto Zoo, and it's where elephants are, quote, managed from outside the enclosure. So if you need to do footwork on the elephant, because I mentioned earlier they get constant foot infections, so they're constantly treating their feet. So in that case, they train the elephant to lift its foot up and put it through the bars so that they can work on the feet. And that's considered protected contact, and it was really developed to protect keepers, not for the benefit of elephants, although it's certainly has stopped elephants being beaten in those facilities.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the Edmonton Valley Zoo, what it's like, and specifically what the elephant enclosures are like.
Sure. Edmonton Valley Zoo is an accredited zoo. It's a city-owned and operated facility, and it is probably at the low end, let's put it that way, of the accredited zoos in Canada. In my opinion, it's actually hovering right near the level of a roadside zoo. It has been underfunded for years, and thereby there's been very few improvements for animals at the facility. And unfortunately, they keep a number of animals that are highly complex, like Lucy, for instance. And they also have sea lions there and some other species that are really difficult to care for. So the facility is small, underfunded, and in very poor condition. The elephant enclosure in total, including the outdoor and indoor areas, is less than a quarter of an acre. And the indoor barn has concrete floors with drainage. They actually had two elephants there up until 2007 when they moved the other elephant. She was an African elephant, whereas, of course, Lucy is an Asian elephant. So they moved Samantha off on a breeding loan. That would be a minimum five-year loan where she's gone down to a U.S. zoo. And in reality, Samantha's not coming back now, and that's actually part of the good news I have to share about the campaign, but I'll tell you that in a minute.
Sure.
So concrete floors in the barn, which are very hard on elephant feet, and hard-packed dirt in the outdoor enclosure. There's no browse available for her anywhere in the enclosure, not even grass. Now, they do take her out on walks, and they do that when the weather is not too harsh. Of course, it's Edmonton, so it's very cold in the winter. And also, sometimes she's very unwell because she has a series of medical problems. And so if she's not well enough, she also may not get out for a walk. For the most part, her walk is just along concrete paths within the zoo. But they also, especially when the media are around, take her out into grassy areas and one area out the back that actually has some trees. But she, like I mentioned before, she's under constant threat of the bullhook. So they're always pushing her along. And they're probably doing that because they want to get her exercise. She's enormously obese, and she has circulatory problems as a result.
Mm-hmm.
So to be fair to them, yes, they're trying to get her exercise. On the other side, that means that she's not getting any time when she's able to make decisions about her own life and her own well-being, which is very important for elephants.
I was at a talk this past weekend with Professor Tom Regan, and one of the things that he mentioned to the audience was that it's important to think of animals as beings who have a biography and not just a biology. And I was wondering if you could tell us about Lucy's biography. Where did she come from? How did she end up at the Edmonton Valley Zoo?
Yeah, I know a lot about Lucy, but the one bit of missing information is actually what happened to her family. We know that she was orphaned when she was, well, she was an infant. She was somewhere between 1 and 2 years old, and she was taken into a facility called the Columbian Zoo in Sri Lanka. But it's sort of a way station. It's a place where wild animals were captured and held until they could be sold to zoos. So it's hard to say if Lucy's family was actually killed in an effort to capture her and bring her into a zoo, or if they were killed or for some other reason, maybe poached or culled, and then Lucy was captured. It's hard to know. But there has been, with elephants, a lot of killing of adults in order to capture young animals, particularly 30 or more years ago when Lucy was captured. So that's where she started. She went into this facility, and they held her there, and then they sold her to the Edmonton Valley Zoo when she was just about 2 years old. And she was there for 12 years on her own as a baby, basically growing up. And then they brought in this African elephant, Samantha. And Samantha was there for a number of years, about a decade or so. And then, like I mentioned, she was sent off on a breeding loan. Lucy developed arthritis when she was only 14 years old. It's extremely young, but not surprising given her environment in Edmonton and the cold climate and so on. She did socialize somewhat with Samantha, but not the way you would expect if she was in an appropriate social group with other Asian elephants. Mm-hmm. When I talked to Joyce Poole about this, Dr. Joyce Poole studies elephants around the world. She is to elephants what Jane Goodall is to chimpanzees. And I said to her, what do you think about this idea that maybe Lucy wasn't socializing with Samantha? Do you think there's any risk that she's not social for some reason or something's wrong? And she said, no, why would they socialize? In that small environment with nothing to do, what would they communicate about? Because most of the social activity of elephants is based on some activity. Oh, let's go over there and see Auntie so-and-so, or mm-hmm. let's go over there, there's some really good browse, or there's a good watering hole in that direction, or so on. So social activities, very much like humans, are around the things that are going on in their lives. So if nothing's going on in your life, you tend to just sit there and don't talk, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's Lucy's basic scenario. I mean, there's all kinds of little details throughout that I could share with you, but I could go on probably for 2 hours like that.
I want to ask a devil's advocate question, because I mean, the details that you've shared with me and with our listeners so far today are really awful. And it's hard to fathom any individual being able to have a good life under these sorts of conditions. But I know for a lot of people listening to the program who are who may be advocating on behalf of both individual and groups of animals, they may be listening to the program and thinking, well, why has Zuchek decided to put so much effort and resources into protecting a single elephant? Would there not be a better use of resources, for example, to improve legislation on behalf of all elephants in Canada, or that sort of thing?
Yeah.
And again, it's a devil's advocate question, but I'm wondering if you could
address
it.
No, I love that question, actually, because I really want to get to this point, because the Lucy campaign is really important from a number of aspects. First off, I want to let your listeners know that Zuchek does work on large groups of animals as well, like, for instance, the mass slaughter of cormorants in the Great Lakes and so on. And certainly, we are very aware of the fact that all of the funds that we have are donated money, and we want to use that money in the best way to reduce the suffering of animals in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the issue with Lucy's campaign is a number of things. First off, we're moving into a legal challenge here very shortly with Lucy, which I'll discuss later, but it's important because it's going to deal with the issues that affect every elephant that is currently living in Canada or may even be here on temporary basis, like circus elephants or so on. So that's important. It's important because these are tropical animals, and many of the issues that we'll be discussing about Lucy affect all sorts of animals that come from warm climates that are stuck into a cold climate situation here in Canadian zoos. It's important because it's a test of the zoo regulations. I mentioned before that the regulations in Alberta are some of the best in Canada.
Mm.
And as a result, if those regulations cannot work in this very obvious case for a highly social animal being held alone in a circumstance where her needs can never be met, then the zoo regulations need to be either fixed or dumped, one or the other. Because there's no point in having regulations that facilitate something bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things are very important for this campaign. It will affect how all the other provinces draft their legislation. Hopefully it will affect whether or not they consider CASA to be any sort of a player when they're drafting legislation. And certainly it will affect animals that are not from this climate and coming here. Of course, highly social animals, migrating animals, all of the issues that we're going to deal with in the Lucy case and have been dealing with affect large numbers of animals.
Maybe this would be a good time then to talk about the legal case in particular. What is exactly involved in this legal challenge that's being put forward? Who is it being put forward against? It's obviously on behalf of Lucy the elephant, but how does all this work? I know for myself, the legal system is a bit of a black box, and it's difficult to know how exactly these things function. So could you explain that for us?
Yeah, it is highly complicated. We've done a number of legal actions, and some are successful and others aren't. I tell you a little bit about that, but let me start with Lucy. So I mentioned before that this particular zoo is owned and operated by the City of Edmonton. So we started with a political campaign, and when that didn't work, given that they are violating the law and that we fought for that law, we decided we need to take this into a courtroom if the city is going to refuse to do anything for Lucy to resolve her problem. So we, being Zoo Check Canada and People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, have hired Clayton Ruby, who of course is one of our most esteemed lawyers in Canada, to take this forward. And that's really a testament to how important we think this case is for all zoo legislation right across the country. The issue essentially is the zoo meeting the zoo standards? They've been getting around the law by claiming Lucy is too sick to be moved. And it's an interesting argument they're making, because on one hand they're saying she's happy and healthy in Edmonton, but she's too sick to be moved. And their argument is fundamental to a respiratory issue that has been ongoing, although not recorded in her records for the last year and a half or so. But they claim that when she gets stressed, that's when her breathing becomes a problem. And they're doing a lot of fear-mongering. They're saying she'll die if she's moved, as though it's a certainty. And yet they have no evidence to that effect. They don't even actually have a diagnosis. They don't even know exactly what's wrong with her. If anything is wrong, in fact, it may be a stereotypic behavior that she's developed breathing through her mouth, and that's what they're interpreting to be too sick to be moved. So the question is going to come down to, are they meeting the zoo standards or are they not? The zoo standards in Alberta are loosely based on the American zoo standards, thankfully not the Canadian ones, which are extremely poor. And the American zoo standards, of course, say that elephants can't be housed singly. So the next question that's going to come into the judge's mind is it true, in fact, that it would jeopardize Lucy's health if she were moved? And in that fact, what we've offered to do is bring in experts from around the world to verify the claims of the zoo, whether Lucy is in fact sick or not, and if she is, to get her the best treatment so that she can be moved immediately. Of course, the zoo won't allow anyone in to examine her, and instead they have brought in a veterinarian who has a long reputation of facilitating keeping elephants in bad circumstances. I'm going to give you a couple of examples because it's important to understand this guy.
Sure.
He is the vet of record from the San Diego Zoo, and he was witness to an elephant that was chained by all four legs, dragged to the ground, and beaten with axe handles in the head for 2 days systematically. He, at a hearing related to this, he said that this was appropriate discipline for this animal. Later, when the Hawthorne Circus was being charged with 47 counts of animal abuse, he, of course, came to their defense saying that they had given wonderful care to their elephants, and ultimately that case resulted in 19 convictions of abuse. He also diagnosed two Hawthorne Circus elephants as healthy and able to perform just days before they died of tuberculosis, and their necropsy report showed that they had just 20% of lung capacity left when he was diagnosing them as healthy. And that, you know, there's a number of other issues, but those are just some examples to show you how essentially they've hired somebody to come in who they're claiming is an expert in elephant health, but in fact his reputation is just in helping facilities to keep their elephants in bad situations. So obviously we couldn't let that go for a number of reasons. It doesn't affect just our campaign here in Canada or other ones. It affects every campaign in the United States, because this is a guy who's brought in every circumstance where people are trying to keep their elephants in bad situations. So we intend to file an application in the Alberta court that essentially asserts that the zoo is violating the law and that they have no proof of their assertion that Lucy is too sick to be moved. And in any event, she is in distress, and it is their responsibility to remove her distress.
So essentially what you're trying to prove in court is that Lucy is in distress, and you will be asking the court to allow to have your own examiners come in and do that?
Well,
is that correct?
That's the tricky bit, is what exactly can the court do? Essentially, what a judge can do in this case is to say, yes, you're in violation of the law. You have to figure out a way to fix it. they already know they can't bring in more elephants. And this is what I was going to get to about the positive part of this campaign is when we brought Bob Barker up in September, the zoo agreed not to keep elephants in the future. So they know that their facility is not appropriate for elephants, that they don't have nearly the space, certainly not the climate, to accommodate elephants. So they said, after Lucy's gone, that's it. They're not doing elephants anymore.
Okay.
So
that is good news.
Yeah, no, it's fabulous news, not just for Edmonton, but it helps us think more about what's going on right across our country, because Edmonton's not that much different than Calgary or than Toronto, Cambridge, Quebec, all the places where the elephants are right now in Canada.
And so you don't think it's possible at this point that the zoo could say, I mean, for example, if the judge ordered the zoo to sort of, you know, make some kind of arrangements to create a better environment for Lucy, you don't think at this point, and I imagine that Zoochek wouldn't be satisfied with them simply bringing in a companion for her or that sort of thing.
They don't have the space. The problem is they actually don't really have the space for Lucy.
Right.
Let alone two elephants. And even though they've had two elephants there, you know, a quarter of an acre is not enough. And thinking about, you know, 5 to 6 months of the year, they're just locked in the barn, which is a really, really small space. And they know they don't have the ability for that. I want to just mention something else, because there's going to be a lot of your listeners who are advocating on behalf of animals. And one of the ways that we've obtained most of the information about Lucy, and something I'm just about to mention here in that regard, is through Freedom of Information, and it's an enormously powerful tool, although a frustrating one often to use. But for instance, that's where I got all of her medical records, all of the keeper records about how often she actually is walked versus what they say goes on, all kinds of other information. But one of the bits of information that I actually got through a U.S. Freedom of Information request when they were moving Samantha down to the United States was that the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums, although they're defending the Valley Zoo keeping Lucy alone, they have apparently already told them, you need to get out of the elephant business. You don't have enough space to deal with elephants in that facility. And so we're now researching all of those issues, because you get little bits and pieces of information. But that information is really critical. So we know already that the Valley Zoo and the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums already had this discussion, and they know they don't have space to bring in another elephant. I did also uncover in the Freedom of Information documents where they were talking about doing a what they called a sleepover and play date, where they'd bring Limba in from the Bowmanville Zoo for, you know, a day or two to spend some time with Lucy.
Which is quite a distance from Edmonton.
Well, it's there's so many problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, sticking Limba in a truck and shoving her off over there for that purpose is terrible for Limba, although she's trucked around all the time and her life is pretty awful. But even from Lucy's perspective, bring someone in, that certainly would cause some level of stress, because she's not accustomed to that elephant, and you know, no matter where she goes, there'll be an adjustment period.
Mm-hmm.
But you bring that elephant in, and then within a couple of days, you just take them away again. So either she has a couple of days of stress and then that is removed, or she develops an instant rapport with Limba and then they take her away. You know, there's no good answer to this. Also, the zoo, of course, has been claiming she's not social with other elephants, she's social with her keepers. So why would they even plan an elephant play date if they actually believed that she wasn't a social elephant? There's all kinds of issues in here that the zoo is making claims about things, but even they themselves, the records show that they don't believe it.
One of the things that I really appreciate on the SaveLucy.ca website is the side-by-side comparison of Lucy's story with that of Maggie, an elephant from Southern Africa. And for some of the people listening out there who may be saying, you know, this is an individual and this is not necessarily a huge problem, and even if Lucy is moved, what if it doesn't make a huge difference? I think the story of Maggie is a great illustration of the kind of success that this kind of process could have. So maybe you could tell us about Maggie's story and how that turned out.
Sure. Yeah, Maggie is an elephant who is in virtually the same situation as Lucy is. She was up in Alaska. She was alone. She had had a companion for a number of years, but her companion died. And so she was alone in that environment, of course, another very cold climate. So she was locked in the barn for about 5 or 6 months of the year. She had developed many of the same illnesses as Lucy has, and some different ones. The zoo resisted moving her. There was a movement up there to have her moved to a sanctuary in the United States, and they resisted moving her. But however, at one point they brought in 11 people to consult on what should be done about Maggie, and of those, 10 of the 11 people said she really should be moved, and the one that said she shouldn't be moved, of course, was Dr. Oosterhuis, and he's the guy who's now justifying trying to keep Lucy in Edmonton. And he said, oh, well, don't worry about it. You just need to bring in a treadmill, and that will give her some exercise in the winter, as though it's not ludicrous enough that you're locking this elephant in the barn, but now you're going to try to accommodate her need for exercise by sticking her on a treadmill. Of course, Maggie never used the treadmill.
Right.
And ultimately, Maggie became so ill from colic that she went down and had to be picked up using heavy equipment with the fire department, and just to have her go down again another 3 days later. And it was then, finally, that the zoo came around and said, okay, we're going to move her. I suspect they just didn't want the blood on their hands. They knew that elephant was going to die there, and it was imminent, and that they figured, well, we'll get rid of her as quick as possible, and then it'll be someone else's problem. That's what I think really happened. And I hope it doesn't get to that stage in Edmonton for Lucy. Anyway, ultimately, the zoo did agree to move her, and not just move her, but they moved her to the Paws Sanctuary in California, which is a fabulous facility and one that we're advocating that Lucy go to. And they had claimed that Maggie was not social, she was too sick to be moved, all the identical arguments that are being made with Lucy. And lo and behold, they moved her safely, moved her by airplane. She arrived at the sanctuary. She integrated with the other elephants. She's socializing normally. Her health has improved significantly. She's the belle of the ball out there at the Paws Sanctuary. She's, you know, going around telling all the elephants where do you need to be and where you're going to go. And extremely social elephant, and yet had been identified as antisocial by the zoo. So it's the exact case scenario. There's no reason to believe. Also, I might add that Maggie was much more sick than Lucy is. Lucy does have some foot problems, and she has some kind of respiratory issue. But frankly, the things that she's suffering from are no different than those that most circus elephants have, and they're moved roughly 50 weeks out of the year, constantly on the move. So we don't believe for a moment that it's too dangerous to move her. Obviously, there's always some risk associated in moving any animal, but we think that the risk is worth it. For Lucy's life, and we certainly are looking forward to the legal action because of the points that it'll prove that we can take forward and use for other elephants in Canada and other tropical species.
We're down to about the last 2 minutes of the program, and I'd like to turn it over to you, Julie, and if you have any information about, for example, upcoming events, maybe if you could give us a brief timeline of when the legal challenge is being put forward, if it hasn't already, when these things are happening, how people can get involved, any websites or any ways that people who are listening can support Zoochek in this endeavor.
Sure. Well, certainly continued pressure on the Edmonton City Council is always necessary. Next year is an election year for them. If you know anybody in Edmonton in particular that you could have phone their counselor and start a discussion about why they really need to move Lucy, that would be very helpful. But no matter where you live, if you write to that council, that continues to be important, because part of the legal challenge is going to, some of the question that will be asked is, has there been strong support for her move? And certainly, you know, they've already received thousands of letters, but tens of thousands would be much better. There's the SaveLucy.ca website. I would suggest people go there. It provides pretty regular updates. We do them as much as we can. Mm-hmm. You can imagine the Zoochek office is all Lucy all the time at the moment because of the legal action. It takes a lot of work to do a legal case because, you know, you're drafting affidavits, you're finding your experts, all of that stuff. So that's all labor-intensive. And the SaveLucy.ca website is going to give the timelines as we're moving forward. We had anticipated filing the legal application this month, but we gave the zoo an extra 30 days, so to December 14th, for the city to provide any evidence that, in fact, Lucy is too sick to be moved. It appears from the correspondence from their lawyer that they have nothing further to add, so which I didn't actually think that they did. But in any event, that's what's happening. We'll be filing in court on December 14th, and then things will move pretty quickly thereafter. Because it's a legal application, mostly everything will be filed by affidavit, and then the cross-examinations will happen outside of a courtroom. So they happen with a court reporter, but in a private setting. And then all of the information that comes from that process, the lawyers go into court and argue that. And we expect the full process to take about 9 months, and like I said, starting just before Christmas.
Julie, I want to say thank you so much for being on the program. The Lucy story is something that I've followed in the news segment of Animal Voices for a very long time, and it's always good to hear that there is some progress being made, and I want to thank you for all the work you've done, and thank you for being on the program.
Sure. If anybody wants any information or wants to talk about how Freedom of Information, for instance, might be able to help their campaign, they can contact me at julie@zoocheck.com.
Okay, thank you so much for being on the program, Julie.
Thanks, take care.
Take care.
Bye.
We were just speaking with Julie Goodyear, a representative from ZooCheck Canada. She is doing some amazing work to get Lucy the elephant out of what is essentially an elephant prison at the Edmonton Valley Zoo. Lucy is living in, believe it or not, an animal the size of an elephant is living in a quarter acre facility, and they are hoping to get her moved as soon as possible to a sanctuary in the U.S. So do check out the savelucy.ca website for more information. You've been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Coming up next is Dos Mundos. If you have any questions about this show or any of our other programs, do contact us at animalvoices@gmail.com or at our website, animalvoices.ca.